Joining me, senior attorney with the Pacific Legal Foundation out of Washington, not D.C., the state of, Brian Hodges, senior attorney at the PLF's Pacific Northwest office in Bellevue, Washington. And he focuses on defending the right of individuals to make reasonable use of their property free of unnecessary and, dare we say, sometimes oppressive regulations. He's been involved in cases. 2013, he second chaired the Koontz versus St. John River Water Management District before the U.S. Supreme Court. And back in 2008, Citizens Alliance for Property Rights versus Sims. And he began practicing law in 2001, joined the Pacific Legal Foundation in 2006. And if we have time, he came from the arts, and he kind of has a little bit of a way to equate the arts and real estate, and we'll see if we can get into that later. But welcome to Radio Real Estate, Brian Hodges.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me. What's the name of your coworker in that office that was on the program?
Reed Hopper was on the program with you previously talking about the Clean Water Act regulations.
Right, Reed Hopper, I remember that. So, Brian, thank you for joining me. I was called to attention to you, and eminent domain is a topic that is frequently mentioned on this program, and you wrote an article called Kelo Strikes Again. You want to just do a little thumbnail introduction on eminent domain and what Kelo meant and what it was kind of a shock about Kelo?
Yeah, well, let's just start with the topic of eminent domain, because that's one of the really one of the most violent powers that the government has against individuals. That's the power of government to dispossess you of property when it determines that it either wants or could make better use of your land or other property. We commonly see its exercise in circumstances like expanding infrastructure like airports or highways when they need to condemn property to put a to put a public structure in. One of the things that made the United States exceptional was that we placed a limit on the exercise of eminent domain. We put two important limits on it. Everybody knows the first one is that the government has to pay you. If they're going to go and say, we want your land because we want to build a new freeway on ramp, they have to pay you for your land. They can't just kick you out like despots were able to in history. That's one of the things that makes our Constitution unique. The other thing is that they have to show a legitimate public use. And that's not really a problem when you're talking about things like highways, because that's obvious. But this leads us into the Kelo case. Back in 2005, this case got up to the U.S. Supreme Court out of Connecticut. Pfizer Corporation was looking at moving its headquarters to New London, Connecticut. And
Pfizer being the drug corporation?
Yes, the large corporation. They were going to bring a lot of jobs in. They were, you know, as corporations do, they were trying to strike deals with the local government, get incentivized to, you know, move a large number of people making high incomes into the community. Well, the government there, the local government, said, sure, not only that, but we have this, you know, a whole row of housing that's, you know, low to middle income housing with views of the water that we can just condemn. And you can build executive housing there to attract talent to Pfizer. So they exercise eminent domain. And remember, eminent domain was supposed to be limited to a true public use. In this case, they said that by kicking middle-class homeowners out of these homes and replacing them with high-earning executives, they were going to bring more tax dollars into the city, and therefore it qualifies as a public use.
Now, their premise could be true, but the application of eminent domain to, you know, like if it was empty fields and they said, well, we're going to bring this in and it's going to bring money, that's true. And it's true if you kick people out. Yeah, maybe you'll bring more money in. But to use this vehicle, it just seems insane, and even more insane, it went to the Supreme Court, and it was upheld. Why?
Yeah, that's the shock. Is if you go back to the history of the public use clause, the interpretation of that phrase, it was very simple and commonsensical that the government lacked the authority to take property from person A to give it to person B. That was a simple rule. But in a fractured decision, well, I mean, it got a majority, but in a split court, the majority of Supreme Court justices looked at the Connecticut Constitution and said, well, you know, in this circumstance, it may not outright preclude what they called economic development justification. So they upheld this taking of, you know, I mean, it's so shocking. It seems so un-American but they upheld this decision just to kick people out of the homes that they purchased, that they were paying mortgages on, and raise the homes and replace them with executives. And, you know, before I move on, I just want to add an asterisk to this, because this is one of the reasons why we're supposed to have really a searching review of public use justifications. The Pfizer plant never caught on. The homes were never built. The executives never moved in. The community never got the benefit of the increased tax dollars. The homes were raised, and a lot of them are just left bare now. And the homeowners were kicked out.
So this goes back, the decision was 2005, so maybe a year or two later, they finally bought all the land and kicked these people out. It's been like this for 10 years?
Yes, that the plans never came to fruition. And that's one of the problems with economic development takings that we're going to talk a little bit about. But let me get back to Kelo. So that decision came out of the U.S. Supreme Court. It was shocking to most practitioners. And even, you know, most people who saw it saw that it sort of defied our common sense, our sense of justice. So cities around the country, states around the country, started to enact laws to protect against this type of economic development taking, ironically, New Orleans being one of them.
Now
where they amended
before,
their
Let me interrupt you.
Yeah.
My guest, Brian Hodges, he's a senior attorney with the Pacific Legal Foundation, and we've been talking about eminent domain, the basic definition, what happened in Kelo, Connecticut, and now we're going to get into the states that actually changed laws so it wouldn't happen in their state, and then we're going to talk about this Louisiana decision. But before we do that, to go back, I have discussed this many times, but I never realized that the Supreme Court, they were interpreting the Connecticut Constitution and saying, well, based on that Constitution, they were going to side with this. So that implies to me that if it was another state, that they might have decided differently, or if it was more of a federal case, they might have decided differently? What do you think?
Well, those are contours of the decision that we haven't been able to fully explore yet, because in the years since Kelo, there have been multiple attempts to get the court to re-examine its decision or at least put some parameters on its decision, because the portion where they upheld the Connecticut's decision is worded in a vague enough manner to potentially support really direct what we would call private takings, taking from person A to give to person B. But we haven't had the opportunity to fully explore that, so it's unclear. But as you said earlier, many states took it upon themselves to sort of shore up this ambiguity.
And I want you to get in. I want you to get into that. But just to follow it up, you say it hasn't been explored. Is it because maybe states and municipalities don't want to go that far? They're not, you know, they saw Kelo. They saw the fact that nothing has ever been built, and so maybe other states are not trying to do something as dramatic and drastic that Kelo tried.
I don't think that's necessarily the case, and the case that we're about to discuss out of Louisiana shows that not to be true. But there was so much public uproar after the Kelo decision that many state legislatures were compelled to act to secure these rights, to amend their constitutions to make it perfectly clear that takings for economic development reasons or takings to give private property to another private property owner will not be allowed under the Constitution.
And that's when I kind of interrupted you, so I wanted you to get back on. So in response, you said in your article that 44 states, including Louisiana, amended their constitutions to strengthen protections to try to avoid this.
Yeah.
And then what happened in Louisiana?
Well, and this goes to the case that we were involved in that concerned a private dock operation called Violet Port that's in around New Orleans, and the state public port authority determined that they wanted to take over the port in order to lease it to another private company who they thought would give more beneficial rates or operate the port in a manner more consistent with what the government would like to see. So they exercised their eminent domain power and condemned the port. The Louisiana Constitution had been amended to outright prohibit that type of exercise of eminent domain power, but there was a provision in the Louisiana Constitution that exempted the port authority from this prohibition on private takings if it would advance their operation of the of ports.
So really?
They took advantage of an exception to this general rule that everybody supported.
And for some reason, they felt that the people in charge of ports had some kind of, they were insulated, and they could do that. They would allow them more latitude. And this port is called the Violet Dock Port, and you're saying they took it away, and they leased it to a competitor.
Yes.
Boy, how do you justify legitimate public use with that?
It's hard to. I mean, it's really no different than, a government office saying they don't like the price being charged for a Subway sandwich by one franchisee, condemning it and handing it over to another one who charges, who has more $5 footlongs per offer. It's that it defies common sense. It's self-dealing.
And so this was fought, and it went up to the Louisiana Supreme Court, and what happened?
Well, the Louisiana Supreme Court, in a 4-3 decision, upheld the exercise of eminent domain, said that because of this exception in the Constitution, that the general prohibition against private takings or economic development takings didn't apply to the port. Therefore, it was a lawful exercise of their authority.
And when did this happen?
Yeah. The condemnation?
Yeah, this decision, the two.
Oh, well, the decision, the condemnation occurred several years ago. It takes a while for these issues to wind their way through the various courts. The decision just came down a couple of weeks ago.
Wow.
I call it a silver lining, but it's more of a lead lining to the decision. The court did recognize that the port undervalued the amount of compensation to be paid and ordered the case to go back to Duke to correct the amount of money. But that still doesn't remedy the situation because you have somebody who invested their life developing a business who suddenly finds himself, quote-unquote, homeless with no job and no, their business has been stolen.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. And what did the government or the port authority, if there is one, what was their benefit? Did they end up getting more tax dollars because of this competitor?
Well, that's the argument that they made, is that the competitor will do a better job operating the port that will ultimately result in less government revenue being paid on port business. And so that would be their benefit, is that they get to pocket the savings when the port is being operated by their preferred by the preferred business.
Now, this is a port the Violet Dock Port. It wasn't, of course, owned by an individual or a company. It was a lease. Is that correct?
Well, it was condemned, and it currently is a lease.
But was it a lease to the Violet Dock Port?
I'm not sure what exactly their the nature of their property interest was, whether it was a lease or whether they owned it outright. But in either circumstance, the Constitution protects. If it was a lease, the Constitution protects them for the term of years because it recognizes that that's an estate and property.
Right.
That you couldn't be dispossessed if you have a lawful lease. So in our position as amicus, we did not get into the details of the ownership interest, but we were talking about the larger constitutional principles and the policy implications of upholding something like an economic development taking.
And right, it's still a taking, whether it's a fee simple ownership or a protected lease, they were still taking from one individual, giving it to another private individual, not to build an on-ramp or, it kind of struck a chord because I know in Santa Barbara, there was some guy who had been running a little restaurant down on the beach. And it's different. I think the lease was actually expiring. And then the government, there was a big controversy because they weren't giving him an opportunity to release it. Actually, I shouldn't start to talk about it because I don't know much about it. But it certainly wasn't equivalent to this. Use the word amicus. I've interviewed more guests in my program are attorneys. I should really get a law school degree after 20 years of all these attorney interviews. But amicus, I remember that word. You used it, but I can't remember what it means.
Yeah, sorry about that. It's what's called an amicus brief is a friend of the court brief, which are organizations like PLF and other organizations that have a specialized knowledge either on the law or perhaps the issues before the court can file a friend of the court brief that helps explain the issues before the court, because the parties are usually busy arguing the detailed facts of the case, that sometimes the larger issues, the policy implications or say the history of the law or ramifications of a law go undiscussed or under-discussed. So an amicus can provide that to the court, which is why they're called friends of the court, is because we are supposed to assist the court in deciding hard issues that could have public impact on people outside of the case.
And this distinguishes you from directly, say, representing one of the parties.
Yes.
Like where an attorney, might represent pro bono, but then he would literally be have an agency relationship.
And PLF provides both. We represent people directly free of cost because we're a nonprofit legal foundation. But we also, in certain cases where the issues touch on important matters of property law, individual rights, we'll also file amicus briefs in order to help guide the court toward a more constitutional society, more constitution-driven society.
My guest, Brian Hodges, senior attorney with the Pacific Legal Foundation. We're talking about eminent domain, private property rights, what the government can and cannot do with your property or your lease. And Brian, I want to just wrap this up. Can we take a quick break and come back and have you wrap up where you think we're going from here after this? Just 2 weeks ago, the Louisiana Supreme Court, by a 4-3 margin, upheld the decision to take this lease away. Can you stay on for another short segment?
I'd be happy to.
Okay. And then maybe you can give me a legal opinion. Maybe the Pacific Legal Foundation, under the amicus, could help me. I want to sue the state of California regarding personalized license plates. It's kind of a taking. We'll see if you think I have a case. How's that sound?
I'd be certainly happy to listen to you. I'm not sure how quickly I'd be able to deliberate on that.
Well, just bear in mind, I'm recording this, so whatever you say can and will be used against you. Do you watch a lot of British TV?
I've watched a fair share.
They have, we have our Miranda, you have a right to an attorney, anything you can, even if you say can and will be used against you, but they have a twist on it where they say if you don't say anything now about a subject, but then later in court you use it to rely on it, it might be held against you.
Well, luckily we declared independence from that.
That was probably the reason. Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, RadioRealEstate.com. We'll take a quick break, come back with Pacific Legal Foundation attorney Brian T. Hodges. I'm sorry. Any relation to Gil Hodges?
No relation, I wish.
Too bad. We'll still have you hold over, and we'll come back and wrap up the case in Louisiana on the taking case called St. Bernard Port versus Violet Dock Port. Stay tuned. You'll be right back.